Welcome back to Cairo Nights, currently 9:06. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. New podcast out, Human Genius Podcast. It's beautiful. I have special guests. It's me, guests, me by myself. So you get me even when I'm not on the radio. You can get me on demand. That's what the kids are calling it nowadays. Culture Hour. We're going to be talking about everything going on in the United States culturally. It seems as if we used to have a bit of a shared culture, a bit of a shared idea of what it meant to be decent to each other in the United States. And I have found that it has just eroded over the last, I would say, 5 to 7 years, just completely eroded. And people have lost the ability almost entirely. That muscle has atrophied. The idea that human beings deserve dignity and they deserve respect is completely atrophied, which is why we discuss culture, maybe the most contentious part of the American experience. Should this band have broken up? What does this meme actually mean? These are the kind of things that we cover. So the United States Supreme Court, I did want to get to this before we actually get into more cultural stuff. The United States Supreme Court formally pulled the plug on election-related cases. I'm not concerned about the legalese that's in this. What concerns me the most about the Supreme Court not hearing any of the election cases is when it comes to the people out there, of which I know many, who firmly believe that the election was quote-unquote stolen. There is a vast amount of the population out there. As a matter of fact, I read a poll recently, Shane, said something like only 17% of Republican voters believe that Joe Biden, excuse me, not Republican voters, only 17% of Trump voters believed that Joe Biden legitimately won the election. And I thought to myself, how could such a chasm exist between people? How could people just so, and I'm not saying that they're wrong, but what I'm saying is what has happened now in the United States where people just find government to be completely untrustworthy. They do not trust it anymore. As a matter of fact, they want to get away from it. People are talking about making a third party that best represents them. This schism, I really do think, and I've maintained this for some time, comes from mainstream media. And it comes from, I'm not going to point the finger at Facebook or YouTube or anything like that at this point in time. I think it really does come from mainstream media. Because when you malign one side of the argument, and when you tell one side of the argument that they're bigoted and that they're homophobic and that they're irretrievable, that they're deplorable, there's no coming back from that. You simply can't come back from that. And I think you know what I'm talking about, Shane, when I say that when you castigate people into a certain bracket, when you tell people that they are that way and they can never change and they will always be that way, then there's no way to have a conversation.
Yeah, it just completely denies the opportunity to even have a conversation. It's, I mean, we can just listen to the great words of Dr. Fauci. A lot of divisiveness inside of our country and the media, as much as I know you hate to hear those words, but it's, it truly is. It's honestly a shame, and it's a really big shame to be working in this industry and kind of see all the bickering and bantering between everybody and not just everybody wanting to be on the same page. It gets old after a while.
I'll tell you what I do. This is a trick that I use often, is when someone comes to me with an idea that I disagree with, I don't automatically attribute motive. I don't automatically assume that they are a bad person. I assume that they are a concerned person. Now, I may think that people are totally wrong about certain things. My good friend Billy Sunshine, who is a liberal menace, I hate all of his policies. I hate everything that comes out of his mouth about politics. I despise the way that he talks about politics, but I love him as an individual. And not to get all hippy-dippy about it, but I think that maybe when we recognize that people are worth just a modicum of respect, you just give people just a little bit of respect, then you can begin to bridge the gap between that. But when I read this story, what went through my mind is that there are going to be people who are going to use this as fuel to continue the division, and they are going to go out there and they're going to say, well, the Supreme Court didn't hear the election, where's my recourse now? Where is my recourse as someone who believes that there is actually something fraudulent going on in the election? And it's a shame. It's a real shame that people now can't trust the election process, that they don't see themselves in it anymore. They don't believe in it anymore. And I honestly don't know how you come back from that other than reorganizing the entire thing at the state level and saying, okay, well, we just have to redo the entire thing. Obviously, the mail-in ballot thing was a complete and total fiasco. We cannot do that again. We cannot have states just say, oh, yeah, no, we handle our own signature verification. We can't do that anymore. I think this is the 2020 election, if anything, just showed how fragile the voting process can be. I actually have a friend of mine who he walks around with this idea. He goes, you know, the election was airtight. That's what he always says. The election was airtight, absolutely airtight, the fairest election that was ever made. And I said, you know, man, even an intellectually honest person can say, okay, well, there's a little bit of election fraud. Right? there can be a little bit of it. So it will be interesting to me to see what happens over the next 2 to 4 years and see if this is the thing that actually ends up bringing people together and where they say to themselves, hey, I got to get involved in politics. I have to get involved in government and I have to be able to change the system from the inside. Another piece of sad news I would say is that Daft Punk broke up. Daft Punk is no longer a band. They've been a band for 28 years. And Shane, were you a fan of DP?
Oh.
Have you ever listened to the records?
Oh, am I a fan of Daft Punk? I absolutely love Daft Punk. I was really, really sad when I saw this news today, especially for the fact that I've never seen them live. And they're a group that I've wanted so desperately to see live. Just everything that they do is just so amazing and so sweet, and what they've done for music. It's so awesome. I love their whole bit. I'm a huge fan.
So they do these big light shows, and they have these big... I don't want to say they're like a techno band, but they're like a house band. They do house music, and they're a huge influence on so many artists. Their first record, Homework, is a record that my sister bought for me when I was very young. When I was a kid, we weren't allowed to listen to anything that was not Christian music. And my sister would have to pirate me certain CDs and certain movies. She would have to basically smuggle them to me so we could take it and put it in the little VHS player TV combo that I had in my room. And one of the first records I had was Homework. And it was just it was an amazing record to me at that time because I had never heard sounds like that before. We have a really quick clip of what they sound like. Yeah, man.
An absolute jammer, if I do say
jammer
so myself.
Jammer right there. Shane, when you were doing Top 40 and this came on, I mean, this is a song that's 7.5 minutes long. Were you just tuning out and going and doing your own thing, or was this...
Oh, no, I would play Daft Punk on air a lot, and I actually would, you know, make a lot of jokes, and I would be going live, and I would be telling everybody I'd be dancing in studio, and I would not be lying. Like, I'm already shaking my head right now. You can't see it, nobody else can see it, but ladies and gentlemen, we're moving up here in the Cairo studios.
So the band was started by Tomas, I cannot do French whatsoever, but Benglatar and Guy Manuel de Haman Cristo, a couple of French guys, and they decided to call it quits. I've been in many bands, and to be honest with you, it is very draining, particularly the touring and having to deal with the different personality types and having to deal with everything that can go wrong on tour. And on top of that, a band that's been around for 28 years that has put out the volume of material that they have put out is a feat in and of itself. Most bands make it, 8 to 10 years before they can't hack it anymore, before they kind of lose their relevance. Daft Punk was able to do it for 28 years. I mean, they were sampled on a couple of Kanye West records. I know that, what's his name? Guy from the Neptunes. You know this, Shane.
The Neptunes? You're really killing me. I know. I'm trying to think about it, but they've also done a ton of work with Pharrell Williams.
And Williams, yeah,
the Weekend as well.
Yeah, so it'll be sad to see them go. But that was so they called it quits today, and they changed the culture, I would say, for the better through the power of music. Shane, do you have any parting thoughts on our good friends Daft Punk before we bid them adieu?
If there's anything that I could say is that if I could ever meet these gentlemen, I would love to just give them a hug and thank them for some of the beautiful stuff that they've made. Because I mean, their music is just stuff that you can really lose yourself to. And I mean, my favorite song, "Lose Yourself to Dance." That song has so many happy.
Great song.
Yeah, so many happy memories from hanging out with friends and parties and all this stuff in college and putting that song on and just having the whole entire room, everybody drop what they were doing and just start grooving and dancing. They had the ability to do that. And, you know, there's tons of musical artists that you could equate to and say, like, oh, well, they were able to, you know, bring the whole entire room down. But I don't think they really could bring a room down like Daft Punk could. Like, two dudes dressed up as robots that you didn't even know who the hell they were. So, you know what? Long live Daft Punk and, you know, long live their beautiful music. And that's all I got to say about that.
Sacha Baron Cohen has come out and he said, if you're protesting against racism, you're going to upset some racists. Now, this is an article that came out from The Guardian. It's very long and it's kind of a puff piece about Sacha Baron Cohen. He was in Borat. He was also in The Dictator. And then he was in one of the worst movies I've ever seen, Borat 2. And as I was going through the article, I was thinking, I can't pull anything from this. And then way, way, way down at the bottom, they actually begin to talk about Borat 2 and his motivation for making just such a terrible, terrible film. And he said, this is Sacha Baron Cohen talking. He said, Trump was really just following step by step the classic authoritarian arc of how to transform a democracy into an autocracy. He was completely following the path. Hence, Borat 2, its mission to sway voters in advance of the presidential election was baked into the concept. Baron Cohen told prospective crew members, we are concerned about what will happen if Trump wins and want to make this movie as a protest. Would you join us? If they were risking violence or imprisonment, it was helpful if they knew that there was more at stake than slapstick. So he goes into this article and he's talking about, we were intentionally trying to make members of the Trump administration look bad. We were intentionally trying to make Republicans look bad, which is not difficult to do, speaking from personal experience. But Borat's subsequent movie film was released 10 days before polls closed. Did it work? Perhaps. The Biden team were, reports Baron Cohen, very happy about the footage of Rudy Giuliani horizontal in a hotel bed. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert, there is a sequence in which they get Rudy Giuliani to look as if he is engaging in some adult acts with a very young lady. But it's edited in such a way that it's so choppy that you know that it's fake and you know that it's not realistic. And yet in watching it, I can only think that there are some people out there who are mouth breathers who thought, oh, look at Rudy Giuliani. He's trying to hit on that young girl. Shane, have you seen this film? And do you know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what scene you're talking about. I mean, I don't have a lot of knowledge in the way of like post-production for film and stuff, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a good setup. Sacha Baron Cohen.
It was a good setup.
I mean, he's done stuff in his movies where you got to really give the guy props for the lengths that he goes to. And I really think, I mean, I might disagree with you a little bit, Jack. I don't know. I think, look at all the history of all these politicians that get caught with these ladies of the night or, you know, like our good friend Ted, remember the story about Ted Cruz loving strippers? I mean, it comes out constantly. So I don't think it's very far-fetched to think that Rudy Giuliani got really excited when he saw some young, really cute foreigner girl, but then it was just completely ruined by Sacha Baron Cohen just being a complete J.A., I guess.
What?
That's how I can say on the radio.
What is the deal with high-level politicians? I hate to sound like Jerry Seinfeld. What's the deal with high-level? But what is the deal with high-level politicians? Guys at the absolute top of their game, and they go out and they end up being with some lady of the night, or they end up getting their mistress pregnant, or they end up just completely blowing up their political career. You're at that level. I would imagine that you would do everything in your power to keep it. I would imagine that you would do everything in your power to stay the moral path. And yet, you see it over and over and over again. It doesn't matter if it's Republicans, doesn't matter if it's a Democrat. It happens on a regular basis. You hear about, who was the last one? Guy that ran with John Kerry. John Edwards got his mistress pregnant. And all that was a huge scandal. You hear about, it's usually representatives, like state representatives, that get caught in some house of ill repute, or they get caught in some kind of hotel room. And I'm thinking to myself, as a semi-public figure, right? The last place I would want to be is a house of ill repute, not only because of my lovely wife, but also just because as a semi-public figure, you're going to get recognized. Everybody has a camera on their phone that fits in their pocket. Why risk it?
I think the reason why they risk it, it has to do a lot with just, like, the power trips and having that ego of being like, I'm the man, I'm the alpha, I get what I want when I want it, I make the calls, I do it all, you know. That's the type of attitude that a lot of these politicians have, and it's come over years and years of them pumping themselves up and having people telling them how great they are and that they're doing so many good things, and they think that they can get away with it, but they can't. Because they all walk the same way we do. They still breathe the same air. They're human beings, and they're prone to make mistakes. But I feel that when you're in positions of power, there are times where even self-consciously, you can really wander off into some really weird, creepy, dark places and think that you can get away and do things that you should never be able to do. And I think that's really why we see it over and over again with politicians, because they feel like they have the keys to the car. They're driving this whole entire thing. So, yeah. You know, they can have some leverage with that. And I mean, if you're a person of interest and you're somebody that everybody knows and you have all these great things, why wouldn't you want to be around a bunch of pretty girls and do all that type of stuff? It just fits the whole entire mold of having everything be great and perfect and have all that power that you have. You know, why wouldn't you? I mean, to be honest, I would, but I'm over here just being a board op, so that's probably never going to happen anytime soon.
But so I know that my vice in life, other than drugs and alcohol, is women. I know that I have a horrible, horrible vice with women. I absolutely adore beautiful women. That's why I happen to be very happily enuptured with one. Is that a word? But I happen to be very much so in a relationship with one. But being able to recognize that about yourself. Let us then say that Jack Stein, I want to go and I want to be a politician and I want to ascend to the heights of American government, and I'm going to change things. Knowing that I have that piece of me that is a weakness, wouldn't you want to do everything in your power to prevent that weakness from being exploited? I'll give you an example, Shane. Everybody came down on Mike Pence about 3 or 4 years ago when he came out and he said that he did not go to lunch with women without somebody else there. And he did not have private meetings with women. He always had another person in the room. And everybody said, oh man, what a prude. Oh, what a terrible human being. He can't respect women. I wonder if it was just Mike Pence saying, I'm a guy and I have whatever weakness or I have whatever flaw in me, and I refuse even to the smallest extent to let my moral fiber be compromised. Makes sense to me.
That makes sense to me too. He's setting himself up for success, one may say.
206 says Rudy G was flirting with the girl before they went into the bedroom. If I remember correctly, he put his hand on her leg. Yeah, that was a really gross scene. You're right, 206. But the thing is that his microphone got tangled up. That's why he laid down on the bed, and you can actually see her trying to untangle the microphone from behind him. If you've ever had a lavalier mic on you, it can be difficult to take off. Jack Stein sitting in for Mike Lewis. We have to take a really quick break, but when we get back, we've got some weird news coming down the pike for you, including a special Florida Man edition for Mr. Shane. Take a real quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Jack Stein filling in for Mike Lewis. Text line is actually not getting so weird. Actually, text line's getting really deep and philosophical, and I like it. And I want to take the time to highlight a couple of these. 253 says, I think that fraud, I believe there was a huge amount of fraud on both sides. And I say to you, 253, you are my hero. You are my hero. You're my kind of individual. 425 says Mike, meaning Mike Pence, is a Christian man and does not want his wife to go through the pain of false accusations and rumors. He honors his wife that way. Some men in Olympia get very power hungry and rude and think too highly of themselves. The Bible says pride comes before the fall. This is what you are seeing. I had a front row seat to see some of this. Yeah, I often remind myself, maybe it's just because I have such low self-esteem, but I always try to remind myself that regardless of how many emails I get where people say, oh, Jack, you're so great. Jack, you're the best. Oh, my Jack, absolutely unbelievable. I have to remind myself, just a regular dude. Don't let that ego get out of control. Don't let that ego balloon to, you know, three or four times its normal size. For me, that would be what we would call a healthy ego at three or four times its size. But don't let it get out of control. And I think that all too often people do that. You get one too many compliments. You get one too many emails. You get one too many people saying that you were the absolute best. I love you. And it starts to get to you a bit too much. It's almost like a poison. And you lose your ability to really calibrate where you are in a given circumstance. To get to the weird news, however, what I find so interesting about this is that Stevie Wonder has confirmed to Oprah that he is moving out of the United States. Why? Because he said the United States is too dangerous, more than ever. Okay. Now, I'll remind you that Stevie Wonder is one of the most beloved entertainers of all time, but he is saying that he is packing his bags and he's moving out of the country. He told Oprah Winfrey that he is permanently moving to Ghana and putting the United States in his rearview mirror. He sat down for a virtual interview with Oprah at the end of last year, but even though it took a while, his exodus is finally getting some attention. And this is what I found so fascinating. He wants to move somewhere where he feels valued. Okay. So Stevie Wonder, let's just pull up a quick list of everything that Stevie has accomplished. He has won 25 Grammy Awards, an honorary award, and has been nominated 74 times for Grammys. He's a multi-millionaire. He made all of that money in the United States, but he says that he still does not feel welcome or accepted, and he wants to go somewhere where he says, I don't want my children's children to have to say, oh, please like me, please respect me, please know that I am important, please value me. What's that? I don't understand what angle he's coming from. We do value you, Stevie Wonder. We do like you. We do respect you. You're one of the greatest of all time. What are you going to get in Ghana that you're not getting in the United States? Answer me that, Shane. Like, is this someone whose ego has gotten way too out of control to the point where he can't even recognize 25 Grammy Awards, an honorary award, nominated 74 times, millionaire many times over, and he says, you guys don't like me enough, I'm taking my toys and I'm going to Ghana. What say you, Shane?
I don't know. I mean, I think that it has partially to do with his ego, but I mean, let's look at the great Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle hightailed it out of America for a while and came back. Yeah. And I mean, maybe Stevie Wonder's doing that type of thing. Maybe he's taking some time to go off to a different country and live there instead, where it's probably not as complicated as it is living in the United States right now. You know what I mean? If I was Stevie Wonder, if I had 75 nominations and all those awards and was the man of himself, I would do the same thing. I mean, I don't blame the guy one bit at all. I would kill to go live somewhere else.
Dude, Stevie Wonder is the epitome of the American dream. He's from Michigan. He was poor growing up. He was blind. He was he learned how to play piano, drums, and harmonica by the age of 9. He was signed to Motown in 1961. The guy has had an amazing life. And his parting shot to the United States is, you guys don't like me enough. You guys don't appreciate me enough. And then get this. He says he supported Joe Biden in the 2020 election. But even Biden's win isn't prompting him to remain in the United States. So not only does he get everything, including the president that he wanted, but he's still saying, no, I'm taking all my toys and I'm going with me. And you know what, Stevie Wonder? I'll say this. You'll be missed. I'll miss you, Stevie Wonder, and all your great hits. We got to get to your Florida man, Shane, before we run out of time.
Yeah, we can't forget him.
We can't forget about Florida man. So the Florida man, Florida man's most recent escapade is that he hit a priest in the face and then barricaded himself in a church. Police arrested a Florida man who allegedly struck a priest before barricaded himself inside of a church on Sunday. News outlets say the police officers in Melbourne, Florida, arrived at the Archangel Michael Coptic Orthodox Church early on Sunday in response to an incident involving church officials and a man. Police say that the man hit one of the priests and was seen with a firearm when officers arrived at the scene. Members of the church were able to escape, but the man barricaded himself into the front door and he threatened to kill himself. SWAT members were at the scene negotiating with the man, who was finally arrested more than 4 hours later. Detectives are continuing to investigate and determine what charges he will face. So this is what I love about Florida Man, intrinsically, is whenever you get a really good Florida Man, it's always like, it's almost as if it's a mystery. Why did Florida Man get naked and walk down the highway? Why did Florida Man try to wrestle with that alligator? Why did Florida Man punch the priest in the face? We never actually know what Florida Man's motivations are. We just know that Florida Man do what Florida Man does.
This is true. He is a complete original with his work and his content that he comes up with. He is a complete original. I find it absolutely... I mean, he's going to have some repercussions because of this, even, like, outside of the law. I mean, like, he punched a man of God in the face.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Some people could probably look at that and be like, listen, Florida Man, you're going to have to explain yourself one day when you're at the gates when they're like, oh, Florida Man, welcome. We might have to make you wait a second because you definitely punched a priest in the face, so we're gonna have to put you on ice for a second, bud.
So finally, to wrap everything up, we have actually, Shane, you picked this story about an Oregon University football player, Spencer Jones, starting a fight with a smaller.
Yeah,
Tell me all about this.
It's the University of Oklahoma. Yeah, so there's a guy named Spencer Jones. He's a wide receiver and a placeholder for the University of Oklahoma football team, Go Boomer Sooners. And he decided to pick on somebody smaller than him at a bar when he was drunk in a bathroom. It comes to find out that the guy that he was picking on has about 10 years of mixed martial arts training. So basically, there's a video that's gone viral of this college football player being a total bro, harassing this guy in the bathroom when he's with his friends outside having a good time, and he starts pushing him, and then you see a video. I was going to pull the audio, but the thing is that there was so much cursing in it that if I played
tremendous.
It, I probably would have lost my job. So I'll just describe it and paint a pretty picture for you. So they're standing in the bathroom. The guy takes a swing at him, and he's so drunk that it barely skits the guy on the face, gives him a little bloody nose. Guy who knows mixed martial arts follows with a right jab, left hook, and then a right uppercut, puts him straight on the ground and puts him in a guillotine and completely chokes him out and starts going to town. And then other people start jumping in, and the guy who knows all the MMA, all of his buddies know how to fight, so they just start beating the hell out of all these OU football players, which is like one of the best programs in the country. And I see this stuff and it makes me think about all the debauchery that you see in college bars, but it also makes me think that this guy is going to get reamed by the coaching staff at OU.
I don't understand what the deal is with all these guys who go out there and they decide to be bullies in public spaces. I've never liked a bully. I don't think anybody likes a bully, but for some reason they still pop up, regardless of what their parents taught them when they were young children. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mike Lewis. We got to take a really quick break. We're going to get out of here a little bit early so we can check in. Everybody get a fair and equal amount of time for what's on your mind. We're going to take a real quick break. When we get back, we're going to find out what's on Frank's mind, what's on Shane's mind, and what is on my mind to wrap all this up. We'll be right back after this quick break.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Cairo Nights, I'm Jack Stein. Wrapping up the show for everybody, Mike Lewis. I just want to get to this text. Really great text out there from 253. Says, what's up, you guys? Good show tonight. You guys do very good, even when Mike's not around. That's such high praise. Thank you so much. Jack, thanks for filling in. Guys are awesome. Maybe not enough people text in and say how cool and great the show is. Thanks. you guys, and thank you so much. Somebody else, 206, good to hear you on the air tonight, Jack. I was at work earlier, and I didn't get to hear what happened to your beloved Pom. Would love to know. Oh, he got stung by a bee. I thought he was going to die, but really, he just got stung by a bee, and I was a good dog dad, and he's okay. So, yeah, but he's a good boy. So that's what's on my mind, is that my Pomeranian is still a good boy. He's got a little bit of a swollen face. What about you, Frank Shires? What's on your mind, sir?
What's on my mind is I started physical therapy today for my ski injury that I had about a month ago. And it's strange, but it's okay. I'm not used to doing this kind of work. It's not what you would think. It's not like using a weight machine, right, or doing some kind of presses like that. It's much more calisthenics type oriented, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Frank, I seem to remember that you say ski injury, but I think you're being modest. I seem to remember that there was a group of orphans that fell off of the ski lift.
That's right.
That were in the middle of like a triple black diamond course, and guys were going around them at the speed of light, and they were screaming and crying, and you descended from the ski lift, jumped down, pulled a muscle, saving all those kids, all dozen of them.
Shane. That was Shane.
Oh.
Yeah, because Shane's a lifty. Works up at Alpine.
All that I do for a living is stare at chairs and then press buttons on the radio. That's how I make my living right there, Jack. I'm a ski bum with a radio problem.
Frank, can I give you a pro tip on recovery when it comes to injuries?
Sure.
Pro tip on I'll give you three things that I always do when I need to recover.
Okay.
Bone broth, fish oil, and vitamin D. It's like it's this magical mystery combo that I've been doing. Because you know I run 8 or 9 miles a day, and whenever I have an injury, bone broth, fish oil, vitamin D. It's amazing.
Huh. Okay. Well, duly noted. I will talk to the physical therapist about that.
Wonderful. Shane, what's on your mind, sir?
Not a whole awful lot. One thing that I have been doing a lot lately is I'm trying to just learn more, find some more things to get into. I really like doing history, looking into history about certain bands. And I've been recently starting to get into the Grateful Dead. Never been a Grateful Dead guy my whole entire life. And I'm now trying to start explore the wild and wonderful history of the band and a lot of the other stuff. I'm trying to get into some of the books. So a lot of that stuff's on my mind. I'm just looking for good directions to find some good albums to listen to, some books that I can listen to. I love learning about different bands and a lot of stuff, especially the counterculture. So that's mostly what's on my mind. I've just been listening to a lot of Grateful Dead and Fish and all that stuff and just trying to find if I really like any of it and try to connect any history that I have with it.
You got to start checking out anything involving Neil Cassidy. I think that'll give you a real good insight into the Grateful Dead.
Who's Cassidy?
Frank, you know what I'm talking
about. I was never a Dead. No. I was never. I went to a Dead concert once when I was a freshman in college. In fact, let me check my watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still going on.
It never ended. No, Neil Cassidy from what's that book? Oh man, it's written by Kerouac. On the road,
Jack Kerouac.
Yeah, Neil Cassidy was kicking around with the guys in the Grateful Dead, and they paid tribute to him in one of their songs. But if you're gonna get into that whole vibe, you got to start reading a lot of Kerouac. Got to start understanding the depths of alcoholism and what that does to a man.
And you have to buy a whole bunch of tie dye shirts.
I might have a few of those hiding away in the closet. Yeah. I've been waiting for them to put them on for the right occasion.
Yeah, that's it. How about you, Jack?
I need 206 to find me. This is what's on my 206. I need you to go to my YouTube channel and email me because I'm picking up what you're putting down as far as the Pomeranians go, and I need to talk to you because Boo Bear is getting a little bit up there in age, and if you're talking about what you're talking about. My YouTube channel is called Human Genius. My email is in the thing. My professional email is in the thing. You can send me an email and we can talk all about Pomeranians. That's the thing, Frank, is I'm so emotionally codependent on my little guy that anytime he has the slightest amount of discomfort, I can't handle it. I need to take care of him. And thankfully, Brian, such an understanding guy that when I called him, and told him I couldn't come in, and then called him back and told him I could do it. He was just such a gentleman about it, and I can't appreciate being able to fill in Cairo more, that they're so understanding when those kinds of things come up. Frank Shires, I will see you next time. It's always a pleasure to do radio with you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Shane Peterson, always a pleasure to do radio with you as well. And Shane, excellent job tonight.
Thank you.
Just on the ball. All audio cues, excellent. Commentary, immaculate, sir. Immaculate. I will see everybody next time. Jack Stein in for Mike Lewis. I wish everybody a good evening.